This is part B of our interview with Ricky Johnson. Make sure you check out part A first if you haven't already.
Actually, fascinating. We've spoken to a lot of people on the podcast, and those educators that just dedicate time to people that love learning has changed the trajectory of many people's lives. And, you know, you're right, the joint was falling down around your ears, but it didn't matter because you got these people that give a shit. And they're there to help you through.
And, you know, and it builds a sense of loyalty and commitment. So, you know, I wasn't going to sleep in through the alarm and not turn up at half past seven if my math or my chemistry teacher had, you know, said, I'm going to be there. Yeah. So you just did it. I mean, you don't let people down like that. You never do.
Yeah, yeah. You leave high school and you go to uni.
Mm.
Tell us, how did a boy from Preston find his way to Harvard Medical School?
Oh, it's the traditional path.
Yeah, as we said, you know, there's that all-boy network, and of course you get the tap on the shoulder. They say, you're up next, son, off you go. Okay, so you know, uni was a great awakening for me, because I think one of the downsides, I think, of living in a place like Preston is you do get a bit of a chip on your shoulder, and you think, you know, well, any people, you're a little wary of those outside that
your
little
postcode.
World.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're very wary of that. So I went to uni, and then I met all these people. I had a terrific group of friends who came from places like Parkdale. I mean, you know, Parkdale, where the hell's Park, you know, down in the southeast suburb. And you know, fantastic people. And it just made me realise it doesn't matter what your postcode is, and it doesn't matter what your upbringing are. Mm. There's really good people and there's dickheads.
Yeah.
And they cover the spectrum.
Yeah.
And you'll find your tribe.
Yeah.
And I found a great tribe at uni, absolutely fantastic, and we're still mates now. They were a different tribe to my guys from Preston, although I did a bit of Worlds Colliding, and that was pretty good. It was good, actually. It's, you know, got some of those people to become, you know, friends over time, and that was great. And then, so I did my PhD here in Melbourne. And then traditionally what you did was you went overseas and you did what's called a postdoctoral fellowship. And I went on a trip to the US, and I chose to go to Boston, because, yes, there was terrific education centres like MIT and Harvard, but mainly because it had the major professional sports teams that you wanted. They got the Red Sox in baseball, the Celtics in basketball, the Bruins in ice hockey, and the Patriots in NFL. And I'm a big American sports fan. I thought, it's perfect. You know, I go to Boston and got all the sports I want and a good place to get a job. So I interviewed there, and I came back home, and it was, so this was the 1990s. So this was about 1992, 93. And I remember a letter coming in the mail, and I was still living at home with mum because I had no money. And Harvard's big on their seal, right? They, everyone, the letters they
the
put
the red
Harvard,
seal,
the red seal. So this letter came, and I picked it up and I opened it up, and it's like, oh, they're offering me a job at Harvard Medical School. Mum burst into tears, and I'm like, what are you doing, Mum? You know, and she's, you know, she was like, oh, you know, you're going to go Harvard. And I didn't think much, you know, that was the trajectory when you did, you know, your PhD, you went and worked in a place that was hopefully going to challenge you a bit. It was never the grand plan for me to go to Harvard, but it was the best place for me to go, you know, scientifically, and you know, culturally living in Boston is just a fantastic experience. Beautiful city.
Yeah. Do you think you were the first recipient of a letter from Harvard into Preston's postcode?
Oh, maybe.
Wouldn't have been the last now.
No. Well, Preston's been fully gentrified.
Yeah.
Now,
you know.
Those three jobs that your mum was working paid off, didn't they?
To
support you and...
And she came over and visited me, actually. So I lived there for 3.5 years or so. My mum came over on, I don't know, might have been her first overseas trip or something. And I remember showing her around, you know, Harvard Medical School, which is, you know, very impressive, architecturally and things. And, you know, it's a pretty impressive environment. And, it was nice to see mum proud, actually.
Yeah.
That's a nice feeling.
Oh, I bet it is. Did you, when you arrived, and you looked at that impressive building, did you feel like a fish out of water? Like, did you feel like, I've got this?
Never, I've got it. So the other story I often tell is, there's, of course, probably we all suffer from imposter syndrome at some stage. I got there, and after about a month or so, I was sitting in the cafeteria and thinking, oh, this is pretty good, and, it's going okay. And I looked over, and sitting there in the cafeteria at the medical school were three Nobel laureates sitting around having lunch.
Oh, my God.
I thought, oh, you dickhead, RJ, what are you,
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, you've got a long way to go, son, if you think so look at those guys. They've really done something that's going to, change the world. So, but the thing I liked about America at the time, and I think it's different now, obviously, but, and certainly being in a place like Harvard, is they challenged you to fail. They almost said to you, we're going to give you everything here. Mm. So don't bitch and moan about not having a chance. We'll give you every opportunity. And, if you don't make it, it'll be because either you're not smart enough, you haven't got it, or you don't work hard enough, or both.
Mm.
And it's pretty liberating to be in that environment, And they celebrate it. Yeah. And they never apologize for it. It's like, okay, this is what we're going to give you. And we expect that you're going to do good things.
Yeah. You hear that a lot. We've spoken to some people that have been there on this podcast, and that's the thing that they've said, is that you walk into this environment that just have a red hot crack.
Yeah.
And you know what? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Go again.
Yeah.
If we could instill a bit more of that attitude into Australians, that'd be amazing. Mate, you talked about your mates from the Preston postcode. Mm. Like with your rise through, academia and off to Harvard, and like, how was their reaction to a boy from the burbs? Was there jealousy? Was there support?
Never.
Was there,
never, ever anything like that. And part of what I'd like to think is because, I never got too big for my boots, as Mum used to say.
Mm.
And if you did maybe get a bit ahead of yourself, it was those guys who'd give you a clip, and bring you back to, where you should be.
Yeah.
Very, keep you grounded and level-headed. But my friends, my mates, I always had this feeling that they were proud of, what I was doing. And they did it, and they said it in different ways. I remember they, used to be at footy training. If you didn't train one night, you couldn't play seniors. That was the deal. And, they let me off on that during exam times and things. And just those little things that might not have seen a big thing at the time, but it was. And it was just them looking out for me.
Yeah.
And, I'm just as proud as them. They've gone, a lot of my, they've gone and they had great lives and done great things in their careers.
Yeah.
That's different to mine. And I'm incredibly proud of what they do and what they've done. So I think there's that shared, experiences your upbringing, or what you got given, it doesn't define you.
Yeah.
You can change your trajectory.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really like that. I really value people who do that.
Yeah, yeah, super cool. You talked about footy. How they let you off from not turning up to training. You played 200 games.
Yeah.
You must have been pretty good at was there any aspiration to play AFL?
No, God, no. I was a backman.
Yeah.
Never the most skilled guy. I had some mates who could seriously play footy. But I played amateurs for Preston Morris Brothers Old Boys, and that was the local team. And I ended up playing at Fitzroy. Was Uni Reds and then became Fitzroy Reds and then became Fitzroy. And that was a great experience too, playing in that team at Brunswick Street. It was brilliant. And we won a flag in 2001. It was the last year I played. And it was just a great experience, local footy, amateur footy, playing with your friends, good group of people, diverse group of blokes. And I think footy is a great grounder. So, you know, you can be, you know, say Fitzroy was probably a better example because it was a lot more diverse in terms of where people came from and what they did. But you could be, you know, a professor at a university playing for Fitzroy, or you could be a guy who dug trenches. And if the guy that dug trenches was a seriously good footballer and a good teammate, that was your standing at the club. It wasn't what you did for a job, right? And it's a really good leveller.
It was who you were. And what you did.
And I always thought that footy was great for that, because you seriously, if you're in a good team, you do leave your egos at the door.
Nice one. All right, so you've been at Peter Mac for 21 years. Where did you start?
At Peter Mac?
Yeah.
So I left, I came home from Harvard and worked at the Austin Research Institute at the Austin Hospital. And then a group of us, about 20, moved in 2000 to Peter Mac to start a cancer immunology program. And that's when I first started running my own group.
Right.
So it was my first sort of independent group leader or lab head position.
Yeah.
So I started with myself and a PhD student, small little team. It was good.
Wow. If you think about the culture at Peter Mac, how would you describe it?
Yeah, I think we, to a person, they put the patients first.
Right.
And it doesn't matter whether they're the most brilliant surgical oncologist. I mean, we've got, you know, surgeons who are like seriously good, seriously smart, seriously, you know, can do things that, you know, only a few people in the world can do with their hands.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter whether it's that person or, you know, someone down in the car park. I think everyone thinks I'm here to try and help someone who's coming in through those doors who's sick and needs help. Yeah. And I think ultimately that's the culture of the place. If it wasn't like that, I wouldn't stay for 21 years. Yeah. And I think that's permeated. So we moved 4 years ago from East Melbourne, which was a sort of a dilapidated old place, to this brand spanking new fancy building. And what I really liked is that the culture followed us, because it's, again, it's the people, right?
Yeah,
it's not the building.
So
I think that's that ultimately, that egalitarian spirit, it runs very deep at Peter Mac. It's great.
21 years in the same place. It's really heard of these days. Just really difficult to walk in the front door of a place 20 years ago and then make your way up to be, you know, part of the leadership team. When you think about what you try to bring each day, how has that changed over time?
Yeah, so I think you go from, like when I started my lab and it was just me and the student, you know, we thought about the little task at hand, and so we lived in that little world, right? And we were very project-driven. And then, you know, as I got a bit older, I thought, well, and, you know, as I started to progress through Peter Mac, you realise that you can have an impact more broadly and you don't have to change the way that you think or the way you work. You've just got to expand your horizons a little bit more. And I realised, oh, okay, you can do this. And all of a sudden that gives you a bit more confidence and you push a little bit wider and a bit broader. So I think I went from thinking in a very, very focused, somewhat narrow way to a broader way. And I still get a lot of pleasure out of that. I mean, I said to you at the start, it's the science that drives me, and it does. But, you know, I'm very proud of where I work for all those reasons that I spoke to you. And I think that what I try and do every day is have some impact on that place in some way.
Yeah.
And it may be, you know, on a given day it may be more scientific, and on another day it may be, you know, what we're trying to do, actually more than just even Peter Mac. So we've got a program at the moment. When I went for my job there, my current job as executive director of research – One of the questions was, what do you want your legacy to be? And that's an interesting question to ask in an interview, right? Yeah. And I had to think about it, and it was that I wanted to do something that was going to be beyond Peter Mac. So my grand plan at the moment is that in Australia I want to initiate and build, or help initiate and build, a national comprehensive cancer network across the whole country, so that there'd be Peter Mac's equivalents in every capital city. Yep. In the US they've got it. It's the NCI, the National Cancer Institute. And so they build these comprehensive cancer centres in major capital cities across the US, and it integrates cancer care and research across the whole country. So it doesn't matter geographically where you are, you're still going to get the best care because
it's joined up.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
And it just makes sense, right? Yeah, yeah. So let's not silo ourselves. Let's do what's best for, someone that's living in outback Australia, or, somewhere outside of metropolitan Melbourne, so they still get the best care. Mm. And geographically doesn't define what their outcomes are going to be. So
that's in train?
Yeah.
That's underway?
Well, we're pushing it. And we've got a plan in place. We've gone around and spoken to different hospitals and centres in Australia, and people think it's not a bad idea. So that's a good thing.
That's good. That's a start.
I've spoken to the health minister, Minister Hunt, and he and his team think that it's got merit. So yeah, no one said no.
Wow.
So we'll have a crack. So maybe in 12 months I'll let you know how it goes.
Nice one. You've said a couple of times that how important people are.
Yeah.
And I know that there's many people that listen to this podcast that are in business and are people leaders. And as a leader, what's your focus? What do you try to bring as a leader of a team and of people?
Don't bullshit people.
Yeah.
I think, being authentic and genuine. I don't know, you can think, oh God, that's a bit cliched. But I think it's true. Mm. I think if you're authentic, then you build a trust. Yeah. And if people expect you then to be genuine and trustworthy, then they'll want to work with you.
Yeah.
So I try not to promise things that I can't deliver. And, often I have to say, no, I can't do that, or no, I shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But do it in a way that doesn't demean people. I mean, you don't have to win, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's my nature. I try and just be genuine about stuff. And if you can celebrate the achievements of others and it's genuine, people see that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you get that momentum and, it just builds. So it's nothing more – there's nothing more pleasing than seeing – something that you've just helped plant a little seed and then it really takes off and then it gets that momentum and then you get a team behind it and all of a sudden it's overwhelming, right?
Yeah.
And, that really gets me going, actually.
Yeah, nice. It becomes a movement, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it gets its own sense. It's got its own place.
Yeah.
And then you just get the hell out of the way and let it go, right?
Yeah.
And watch it and enjoy it.
Yeah, beautiful.
So you can certainly see why every morning you're bouncing out of bed and just can't wait to get to work.
Yeah.
But it kind of sounds a bit annoying because I'm one of those people, you don't always have great days. Like, what do you do on those days where you just feel like you can't be bothered? Like, how do you still get to work? How do you be around family and keep that positive attitude?
Oh, look, of course, and in science, for every, 10 ideas that you have, maybe one of them will really work out. So you've got to learn to pick yourself up and keep going. So, I'm human and I have crap days like anyone else. But ultimately, I think it's – I'm just a little built that way. I'd rather look on the good side of stuff. I mean, things happen to all of us and, they happen to me. And if you dwell on it, that's – it's just not the way I'm built, Nick. And of course you do have your bad days. And I go back to Mum, and she just picked herself up and got on with it. And I guess that's instilled in me. Yeah. So that's just part of your who I am.
It's your DNA.
Yeah, it's in your DNA.
That's
my blueprint.
Yeah, there is your blueprint. That's just the way that you are. All right.
How do you lead? Because you've got younger people, older people in your 700 people that you're accountable for. I reckon 20, 30 years ago it was very much, not necessarily Peter Mac, but everywhere it was everyone's the same. And you saw it in football teams. Everyone's the same. You do it the one way, dual sergeants type thing. Now, fast forward to today, almost everything is individualized because person A is different to person B.
Yeah.
How do you approach leadership coming from football background that would have been old school, so to speak, and now modern day management?
Well, you know, so this term EQ is an interesting one, right? Yeah. Emotional intelligence. And, you know, it's a fancy term for just being able to read a room and actually connect with people, right? I mean, you know, what makes you tick, Nick, you know, might be completely different to you, Blake. And you know, you saw it playing footy, right? You got that old school footy coach and he's rah, rah, rah and wanting to have a crack at everyone. And not every player responds that way. And you and that coach would lose that player, right, who didn't respond that way. So if you really want to build a team, then you've got to know what motivates them, what makes them tick. And for some that's, you know, a bit of hard love. And for others it's all that encouragement and you know, positive reinforcement and that sort of stuff. But ultimately, I think you've got to be prepared to take the moment to try and understand and make a connection with that person, right? And if you can, I think you're more than halfway there, because then you can pick up on those cues and you can see how they respond. It doesn't take much, you know, nod of the head, smile, or they sit up out of their seat and you think, oh, okay, that's it.
Mm. Beautiful.
And you don't bullshit them.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Love it. Two more questions before we wrap it up. The first one is, you know, what you do must be really taxing. Although you love it and you do bounce out of bed every day, there's, you know, there's some downside to the place where you work.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, the consequences of not having success, you know, people die.
People die, yeah.
How do you look after you?
I make time to connect with my friends always, you know, whether it's a phone call or, you know, playing footy locally with the older guys here
the
at
Devil
Parkside
Dads.
Devil
Is that
Dads.
What they're called?
Yeah, yeah, Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
You know, an hour of footy and then an hour in the club rooms afterwards. That's really very important. Yeah, I keep myself fit, you know, I run and things and you know, I make time for my kids. So I think it's, you know, I think to maintain relationships, you've got to work at it.
Yeah.
But it's important. It's about ultimately what's important to you. And my friendships are really, really important to me. So it's not work really, but it's just making the time to do it. And whether it's a phone call on the way home from work in the car, or you know, Devil Dad's footy or whatever, just locally. You know, I loved coaching the. Now, both of my kids played at Parkside, my older kids, and Curtis now is almost five and he's just started Auskick and I started going back and now helping out with him. I've got three kids. Max is 19, Lucy's 17 and Curtis is almost five and he's about to, you know, do it all again. I can't wait. And I'm just thinking, oh, perfect, now I can coach him when he's older.
The coaching career continues.
Yeah, and it's great. And again, it's connections, you know. Yeah. You walk around the neighbourhood and you see kids who you coached and they know you and they'll talk to you and, you know.
You wouldn't have it without coaching, without
correct,
football.
Correct, yeah. Absolutely. It's very, very important for me and my community, yeah.
Beautiful. Last one, yeah. And maybe you answered this just a couple of questions back, but we always like to finish off. What's next on your to-do list?
Work-wise, you know, it's that National Comprehensive Cancer Network. I think if I can help pull that off, that'll make me incredibly proud.
Mm.
I think it will. I think now post COVID, it's made you think a little bit about what's important and maybe what to prioritise. And I think a lot more time. You know, Curtis is going to go to school next year, and I want to be a big part of his life. Because you get to do it all again. You know, I've been fortunate, you know, I've had the kids who are now getting through high school, Max is in uni, and I know what the next you know, 12 or so years for Curtis might be, and I'm really excited about being part of it. So I want to be there in the moment with him. So I want to spend a lot of time with him.
Love it.
There is one more question. Just come in now. So you're the definition of hard work, and you've actually got a great quote that you told us. I don't think you've told our audience yet, and I'll let you share it with us. But talking about the younger generation who generally, the generalisation is they want it now. So yeah. They want to walk in. You walked into Peter Mac 21 years ago. New person coming in now, and they'll say, "No, I want to be a, you know, or whatever, you know, get a promotion, you know, really quickly." What's your advice? If you get kids, school kids, school leavers listening to this podcast as well, what's your advice for those who want to make a name for themselves or want to advance their careers?
Yeah, I mean, look, I guess one of the things I've lived by is, you know, don't fail because you didn't work hard enough and you didn't try hard enough. I mean, it does sound simplistic and maybe even a little cliche, but don't ever fail because you didn't have a crack and you didn't, you know, put in everything that you had for it. If you fail because of lack of talent, that happens sometimes. You know, not everyone's blessed with the talent to play AFL or make the Olympics or win a Nobel Prize. But, you know, you can always aspire to it and just, you know, have a crack at it, you know. So that's what I do tell people, you know, when they start. You can't map out your future because, you know, you don't know how it's going to go. But, you know, don't live to have that regret. Oh, if only I tried a little harder. If only I put in a little bit more. Yeah. If only I didn't take the sort of the easier way. I think you can, you know, look back on whatever career you have and be pretty happy with it.
Yeah. Love it. Great advice. Great way to finish it off. Hey, mate, look, thank you so much for joining us on the show. It is – your authenticity just reeks out of you, and it is little wonder you've been able to go on and achieve what you've achieved. And I think as Victorians, we're bloody lucky. We get a guy who's doing what you do and helps so many people out. And, you know, given what you want to do on that national scale, I've got no doubt that that'll come true. That'll be your legacy.
Yeah, I hope so. And, yeah, it's, you know, and it's about – we've got fantastic people all over the place, you know, and it's about just harnessing that talent and, you know, and getting the hell out of the way. Let them go. That's it. Yeah.
Thanks, Ricky.
Thanks Ricky. Blake.
Thanks, Nick. It's been great. Thanks, guys.
There you go, Blake. That was Ricky.
How do you reckon you'd go wind back the clock to you
mm-hmm.
at 10 or 11 or 12?
Mm-hmm.
Your mum says, I'm off to my third job. Make yourself some dinner. You can watch half an hour of TV, and then I want you to brush your teeth and tuck yourself in, and off to sleep you go. And I'll come in and check on you when I get home at midnight. How do you reckon you'd go?
I reckon the freezer section, particularly the ice cream section of the fridge, would have just been absolutely decimated.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would have been daunting, I imagine. Very unusual, but you live in a great community,
yep.
Something that has really been lacking, you know, in more modern times.
Yeah.
But how great.
Oh, yeah. What a great man. I, you know, we finished the chat with Ricky and he's just so humble. Like, and I was saying a little earlier to you, he's the sort of person that you want to work with and you want to work for. Because you know that he's invested in who you are and what makes you up, and you know the work that he's doing and has done for, you know, over 20 years now is just so important. What a great man, blew me away.
Yep, an inspiring person and unassuming, humble. You wouldn't know who he was walking in the street. You know, he doesn't carry a big banner around saying this is what I do. He just gets on with it and. You know, all the way back through his childhood, it's just hard work. And what's the quote that he lives by?
That quote is, never fail because you didn't work hard enough. Wise words, Nick.
All right, that's it for this episode, Doolanders. See you in episode 47.
Bye for now.